Accession number 30342, reel 12.
Right, Mr. Mackay, you've got the documents that you were talking about, and I've switched the machine back on.
Yeah, well,
it seems to be running.
That must have been some peer got himself got it packed in again.
Yeah. Could you just read that out? What it says?
It's a private OS McDonald at Peter State Associates, County Durham. Extra of Laura, whatever that is.
Lira.
It's got my army member there.
Could you read
Northeast Repart T2, private McDonald. £23. The Dean's, that's the Dean's post office near where my hometown was. That's stamped, I couldn't cut the date out.
And that's some kind of transfer for Italian lira.
It must have been, yeah, so there's some German money there, whatever that's, well, that was worth, I think it all.
Could you just read what it says?
I'm rent a mark.
And that's like a one mark note?
Yeah, it looks like it, doesn't it? Aye. It must be ancient as well.
And you've got your shoulder titles there.
Yeah.
DLI shoulder titles.
And that must have been on that, you know, that fancy jacket I had, that one you've got a picture on, I think, somewhere. It was in the Student Gazette.
Oh, that one.
Yeah, that must have been what I had on there. You see it?
Let's have a look.
One on there. It's...
Did you wear that jacket in action?
Only when I used to go up with an associate and go away with dancers and not leaving, that sort of thing. Wouldn't do it in there.
I should have asked you, I forgot to ask you when you got to Algiers. Did you get a chance to look around Algiers?
Not really, no. No. I told you about that lad called Jack Brett went and got drunk and he got murdered, didn't I? That's as much as I remember about him.
Were you warned about places like that?
Oh, yeah, I was, yeah. Yeah.
What did they tell you? What did they...
I got a few... I got too much to drink one night, I think, as well. We got taken back to the barracks or something. I just... Did I tell you... We were in Algiers. Did I tell you about... That's a good back.
That's okay. Yeah.
There's a picture of my mum anyway. In the ring.
Yeah, tell us about the ring, because that's what you went upstairs to get. Oh, that's your mother.
Yeah.
And what you had this ring?
All that was all during the war.
And what was that like? Do you regard it as like a lucky charm?
Well, yeah, yeah. You know, we don't part with that. Probably the bloke offered me something for it, like one time, and I wouldn't give it.
Yeah. What are the inscriptions on the side? Are they just decorations? It's like a little.
Oh, they're just. They're three stars, aren't they? Yeah.
So where did you get that from? How was it made?
Well, my mother just had it made for me, so they sent it out to me, because she got a picture in there. Uh-huh. Oh yeah, I was going to tell you about, I think what I mentioned before, on the last tape, but when and there was this big fat of wine. Did I tell you what that was?
No.
This was Tunisia, or whatever it was, like, and there was a public book as big as this room we're sitting in now. It was all sort of full of this wine. Cheap wine, I can't, the name just escapes me right now. And there were all sort of taps around it, and whatever you do, you don't touch the wine. So, of course, as soon as we got the chance, we got the best in, went on, and poured away the best in, started drinking the wine, and all that. There was quite a crowd of people there. That might have been among this lot, and I don't really know. And one time, one of the guys with a ladder, they put a ladder up, and looked at the top of this big fat. There was a dead German or a dead person floating on top of the wine, picking with all the wine and floating there. Oh, you're drinking this wine all that, you know. Oh, no. In 10 minutes, we're drinking the wine again. Didn't care down about being there. And when it comes to lights out. Spike was in the Sergeant Major, like, and he had one guy blow the trumpet, lights out. And he's a good trumpeter, so a very good trumpeter. And said, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, and we're just trying to do it off. When he finished the lights out, he broke into code, the music hall rag. It was a popular song at the time, popular music. And he's a really hot trumpeter. And I tried to go to the security, and he goes, yeah, it's you, it's you, it's. And Spike said, put that bloody trumpet down. And he's walking about trying to find his way there to the trumpeter. He was all very light about people starting to sleep on the floor. He just got the door and just stopped the one and knocked him flying and all that. And that was the end of the trumpet for that night. That's the end of that story anyway.
Now, in the camp, in the camps, obviously you had the Italian guards, and you had, but how, what about discipline between, within the British soldiers? If anybody stepped out of line, or if you felt like there was a thief, or how did you handle your own discipline? How was it?
Oh yeah, you were. Yeah, you had to be handled quite well that way at all, because if you're talking about escaping, which was pretty hopeless at the time, you had to report to your escape officer, and he in turn would take it to your regimental guy that was in charge of the camp officer. Like, we only a regiment, when an officer switching to regimental sergeant, being a regard, and we never got that far as the little group I was with.
Did you talk about a scare?
We talked about it, but you see yourself, well, you can't speak a word of Italian. You know, where you got it? Well, we don't even know where we are, because it took the back of the wagon, took the barbed wire road on. All I could see was cars driving up on the outside roads, and they were free people, and you were near it. So as a guy, you wouldn't know what to do.
What about misdemeanors among the prisoners? I mean, somebody having kids stolen or something, or how did you have things set up to deal with people that were out of line? Was there any kind of committee or?
I'm trying to figure where it was. Was it in Germany or Italy? There's one bloke. Did something that was out of line, that was a really nasty thing. Anyway, the ducking him up and throwing him in the trees, and he died that way. Like he just died there on all the filth and all that. And
so, in extreme measures, they would actually.
You had to. You couldn't pinch anybody's coat because everybody was so desperate for the food.
Other prisoners of war, I've talked about that there was kind of like barter barons, like cigarette barons, people that had accumulated material, gangsters almost.
You could do that more when you're working in the working camp outside of Italy, because I was behind barbed wire all the time in Italy, so we didn't get much of a chance. Now and again, you'd probably barter, like I said, about swap the tin of there, soup for a tin of meat or whatever, and things like that, But other people were better off at the bar, I suppose they were batting for cigarettes, and some guys used to deal with the Italians and things like that, but I never got that close enough to them.
What about news? How did you hear about
it? Well, some guys had a radio, but by the time you got a bit added, and all that, you couldn't take a look or notice of it.
How was it added? Was it added in an optimistic way?
Yes, of course, As if you more or less pack your bag and go tomorrow, sort of thing, But it wasn't there, nothing like that.
Do you have any contact with the Italian nobles? Was there any?
Oh no, never saw anybody. No.
So this is taking us to like the summer of 1943. What about the actual invasion of Italy? Do you remember hearing about that? So this is obviously.
Well, I was at Maserati then, camp 53, and we knew about it, and we're getting a bit of a feedback about that. And the Germans were supposed to be heading towards where we were. So the Italians more or less panicked, more or less left us to our own devices, sort of thing. And there's about four or five of us got out the wire to get out, and we hadn't got any more than 100 yards for the firing rifles or and all that, and we had to get brought back in again. We were penned in then. It wasn't long after that at all, but kept in the bunch and finished up getting sent off to Germany.
Did anybody escape? Did anybody get away?
Well, the main bit I don't know because of fair sized camp.
Who were the four or five that were with you? Were they?
I can't.
Were you still with Mackay?
It probably was. I can't recall anybody. I probably just said there, let me go. I can't pick anybody, not in Italy anyway. But I don't really got on this tape about the camp, two camps, but there's one.
No.
When I went to Maserati, I got up with a slide from Giada, they called him Campbell. Him and I were walking home, and the fella shouts to me, "Hey, Mark," and he was the guy who went to school with me. They called him Todd Aslett. He always got called Todd because he wasn't very tall. And this Campbell walked on, and somebody shouted to him, "I'm Lord Behold, he's your own brother." And he said, "Oh, he's not glad to see." Well, I'm not exactly glad to see, he says, but he says, "The fact that we've met and all that." He says, "Look," he says, "I've just got a parcel," he says, "from home." "Oh," he said, "no," he said, "I can tell you what's in it because I sent it with my mum." And he had some time before sent the parcel off, and this brother had discovered. So we both shared the same parcel. I think I sent it from Charo. That's not thing, isn't it?
Was Campbell a DLI man or was he from another era?
He might have been a DLI man, but of course, you say it might have been the 16th Battalion or different battalions that they didn't really know.
Yeah.
Well, so it's been the fact that he was a Geordie and all the other from Charo, his brother, like we said, must have been fitting a fair bet that he was from the DLI at the time, but I can't pin that down actually.
Yeah, so you were in the camp, the Italians left, the Germans arrived. Can you just describe your first impressions of the Germans? How did they, what was their?
Well, you were more or less pinned radio, you could not move at all then, you know, and you got sent off to the railway, you got the railway truck, set up the railway there.
And how many people were in the truck?
Oh, well, just more or less like sardines.
So you were
and if you
standing up on
if you if you want to pay, you had to get as near the door as you possibly could and just pee. If you want to crap, well, it's just too bad. It wouldn't let you out, it wouldn't let you at all.
And how long were you on the train for?
Quite some time. But the pull up at some place and you open the door and you just had to stand there and have a slash outside the door and all that, you know. And you couldn't get out. And you get the blood pressure and things like that. And then for some time then they closed the doors again and you went off again. And you only had a little place of big sort of top like a giant sort of letter box. And so other than that you didn't get moved at all really. And when we finally went to this place in Germany, we all cut out and we all had to get our hair cut. And everybody had cut off their head and was bald in the neck. And it was winter time, there was a lot of snow about and that, and you had to strip right off. And the went in the clothes was taken away to get deloused because you were full of different things, all scratch and all that, prisoner, because they had any to clean clothes or change anything that hardly. And you went in this place where they had you got like a hot steam room bath sort of thing. And you really got a good going over to get really the laws and things like that, clean and all that. And you got another room where they were getting dry. Well, we were waiting in queue to go in there. And of course, you went in there. And when you stood here, there was a stitch of clothing on there. All the men that was going in, probably 16 or 17 men, I can't recall exactly how many. Or going in, and just here, a load of Russians and Russian women and things like that, you know. And of course, you think about your strip there and all that, sex. But of course, it's not that they got any heavy because A, you're perfectly cold and quite hungry. And from what I can gather, we went in there, we got washed, steamed, dried, we had to come up to the other side. We can get our clothes to put on, back on again, for the court into the machine. And apparently, these Russians, they went to a gas chamber. We didn't know that at the time. And we come out all up on like hell about being scored and all that, and they said just gone. But we didn't know we were going to gas you, and don't suppose they did either. Didn't know anything at all about that at the time.
What can you just describe what this camp looked like, this the German camp?
Well, it wasn't a camp, it was just like a we were just as close as this wall here, shall we say.
It's like a
and the Russians were just there. We were lined up to go there, and we were going up this door, and they were going to that door. And that was it, like. It must be terrible.
What did you, as a group, you're on this carriage, you're on this train, you're going into Germany. What was your outlook on things, you know? What were you talking amongst yourselves? I mean, because you were going into the unknown.
We didn't have a clue what was going to happen to us and all that. We thought it was a bit, you know, a bit weird in that. And we went to a place called Torgau, which was a prison camp, and there was barbed wire all around there, and guards and sentries and things like that, and I had a searchlight going on all the time, so you couldn't move out your little hut that you had, and if you did move out your hut, you had to, of course, your mate was in D hut, and you were in B hut, when going to have a chat with him at night, you know, you'd have to wait till the light goes round. You'd follow the light and stand, you'd get in that hook, and you'd go in a bit of crap with him, or whatever it was, and you'd come back and dodge the light and get back in your foot, you know what I mean. And apparently there was some Polish or Russians, Russians it must have been, were in the other part of the place, like, and they were treated half as gentle as what we were compared to us, you know. And they sent in some dogs for them, they killed the dogs and let them, the Russians did, so the story was. And we eventually got a cousin of being there for a little while, and we got sent to the working camp.
Well, we'll talk about the work camp a little bit later on. First of all, the food in Germany compared to the food in Italy, was it better or worse, or more, was there more of it or less of it? Or?
I should think there was probably more of it. It was so bitterly cold, you're constantly hungry, and there was no substance in the food at all. It would give you sort of a very liquid sort of soup, you know. I mean, you have a joke about it, like if you've got chicken soup with some water, has more of the eggs in, sort of thing. It's definitely not quite as bad as that, but barely, pretty close to it.
What was it? I mean, before you got to the work camp, what was the daily routine in the German camp? You know, the first German camp you were in, you know, the problem.
You had to wear goat shirt and coat, and had to, you know, shout their name, things like that, and all that, and then you'd eventually get dismissed. But they counted it two or three times a day, would you? And make sure there's nobody missing and things like that.
Do you remember, I mean, we talked about this off the tape, and your German prisoner of war number, you've got no memory of...
I have not, no. You said you did. I can't recall having a prisoner of war number.
Or the dog tag either, for that matter, the German.
Yeah, my number's in that book, if you could give me.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wasn't aware of the fact I had a number.
Uh-huh.
I can't recall having a number. For
yeah. Now, by this stage, was Mackay still with you here in Germany, or had he gone...
He was with me in Germany, yes. And then we sort of, somehow we got a different job to what I did in the work camp, or a different shift or something like that. So we sort of gradually sort of went quite as closely this one.
Right. Now, before we get to that, you were in the work camp, and apparently there was a rule that the Germans had that you had to work below a certain rank, and you didn't have to work above a certain rank.
Oh, yeah.
You know what that was, and how that affected.
Well, I think myself, a sergeant probably didn't have, I didn't come any lower than a sergeant. I think probably a sergeant could have got away with it, I don't really know. But a lot of guys was dropping the rank, so they could get the work come, to get away from the humdrum and the dreadful existence you had there with the barbed wire and all that.
So when you were in the camp with the barbed wire,
yeah.
Was it boredom was the problem that...
Boredom, basically, yes. You know.
So people were actually looking forward to getting out and
well, it was a case of the unknown. You didn't know what you were going to get. And I, myself, and the group of chaps with me, on the roadway, which was it turned out okay.
But where was this at?
A place called Falkenburg.
And how far was that from Torgau?
I'll give them a guess, I'd say about 8 or 10 miles, I really don't know. But
yeah.
It's such a small little place, I suppose, you would never find it on the map unless you...
Could you just describe, you're at the big camp, were you just ordered that you would go to the work camp, or did you volunteer?
Oh no, I didn't volunteer. No.
How did it work, how did it...
No, we just got picked up to go there, and look at the drawers, I suppose.
And, so that would be in a truck?
Yeah, and we got took there, we got put in this place, like a, not quite a farm, like a small holding or something, with like a big room they get to, like a church hall sort of size room, you know what I mean. And we had bunk beds in there, it was two, I can't recall. And that was okay. You had wooden slats allowed, and you got blankets and things like that, and you got a little mattress of some kind, and you got use of that. And going out to work, you used to get a certain amount of food brought out to you, and of course when it was a winter, you're more or less back to the same sort of watery soup and things like that. And you used to get a bit of bread and... Well, it was very, very basic indeed. And you got that way, having been there, working on the railway, you had an idea which trucks were coming in, might have had some food on them. So what you had to do is sneak up the trucks. A, Bill Parry, a mate of mine, who was on during the day, he would put across and tell me just where the truck was, put it very shortly. We'd go there, we'd have to break the seal up to get in, and we're all dressed in dark clothes, like on these work, black overalls, a black hat and all that, and pass up whatever food you could pinch, and seal it up again, and go to the locomotive shed, and go to the ducts underneath where the engines were, like they have in the garages where they're getting into the cars and things like that, with the same principle. Hide the food there for as long as you feel it could get there. Then whoever could take it back would take it back and distribute it among the guys who had done actual pinching things. And you could pinch some rubbishy food, some good food.
So, what kind of work? What do you remember that you
Well, you could try and get tins of meat or things like that.
And what was the bad food that you
were going to do? You'd eat anything at all. Because you're so hungry, you get tins of meat, and there was biscuits and bread. When I say bread, like I said, I mentioned before about the black bread and things like that. And that's what happened. One time, we had been bombed by our bombers, and working on this railway, it was so bad, we were going to get marched back to our barracks at were headquarters and all this farm holding things. And there was a train on fire. And apparently, at one end of the train there was ammo, and the other part of the train was some food. Well, by that time, we had to manage to handle the sentries a little bit, so we went out to pitch the food. And there was only a couple of sentries, and there was must have been about 30 of us or more, so a bit apprehensive about us. There were some eggs there. We were pinching crates of eggs, carried which we could, and the sentries knew for a fact that if they kept quiet and didn't make a fuss about it, they in turn would get something to eat. And it was a bit telling about the bombs and the shells and things that we pinched all these eggs and got back and gave so many to the German sentries and things like that. And we were sitting down, and we were eating about 12 and 15 eggs at a time, you know.
But you cooked them first.
Yeah, so hungry. It must have been frying them, I can't recall how exactly you did it, but you're eating all these eggs, and you went egg-bound as it were. And the Germans were quite happy to get the egg themselves and not have been, you know, dug up in that time.
What was, so about how many men were in this hut that were working on the railway?
I'd say about 70 blokes in this big public.
And were they all British or were there other nationalities?
They were all British, as it were. Yeah, these were all British.
No Australians or New Zealanders?
And there was no, there were the English Welsh or Paddies or whatever they call it. And that was, and there's also some Russians a bit further down in the middle part of the camp. And the Russians, we did get parcels, you know, because they were, and we were always pacing over, we were 6 months go along, not too bad really. But the Russians didn't get any parcels at all. They didn't get anything. And we taught them how to sort of break into the wagons. Because it might be nice, but the Russians were very, very poorly educated at that time. You know, it was very, very elementary sort of thing, very elementary. And we taught them how to open the wagon again. Well, one of the groups of them there, they broke into a wagon that contained vodka. So they started drinking the vodka. Well, when you've got an empty stomach and you're drinking this stuff here and all that, you know, you really get over the top. And the Germans, the collars in every one of them, and they shot this one of the lads. They shot him in the stomach and they took him back to the prison, place where they were, like a prison camp sort of thing. They just lay him on the table there, letting him die slowly. As a warning to everybody else, we lay there for quite some considerable time before he died. And that sort of thing. So, but they shouldn't be drinking vodka, you know, they shouldn't drink any kind of food, not drink, because they weren't as sharp as pigs and that. And that's. And that for his work on the railway was a young lad there. He come, did it, I don't know, but yeah. Some part of Russia anyway. And he was only about 17, big strong lad. And we used to drive the crane. Well, we used to feed these what he called castings, like little trucks with their cordons and pick them and put them in the tender at the locomotive so they could bring it down again. And he used to work the crane. And they told him one time, they were going to hang him. He was only 17, and he was a bit of a state and all that. And it's a said, and langsam, slowly. So they said, langsam, slowly. Man. The kid panicked and all that, you know. But anyway, eventually did hang him, apparently. And they made the rest of the women and the children in the camp, and the other men, watch him, you know.
Why did they do this?
But don't let this happen again. What he done? I don't know what happened, but he was hung there. But they made everybody in the force of watch this lad being hung and died. And that, you know. And that's as much I know about, you know.
So were the British treated, I mean, you got the parcels and they didn't?
They didn't get anything at all.
Did the Germans treat the British better than they treated the Russians, though? Could you see a difference in
The Germans didn't really like the Russians, you know. Well, I felt sorry for them because I was working down the shed then. I worked in some hut, say about as big as this room, like, and there was a couple of Poles, a couple of French workers, some English lads, and some Russians, you know, who were working. We were trying to talk to one another. So all you could talk to was some snatches of German or Punjabi, sort of, you know, talk about food and he got, you know, going this way at dinners and things like that. And we got on quite well, really. So the Russians were okay with us, and if you give them anything at all, oh dear, it was something special. And they were really kind. The Polish lads were very kind to us too. We're kind to them, of course.
Did any of the German? I mean, how many guards did you have? I mean, how did that work?
About three when he went on a working party. On the, it would be three when they were.
And where would they be? You were in the big hood. Where would they be?
Well, you got that way. You're talking about you've got to be sure there's a confidence sort of thing, and. I had one day, and the nickname I gave him was Tommy Ross, you know. And he called him Tommy Ross, and he used to talk about him. And remember, he'd put his record down, He was talking much like one of the lads picks up, so I was doing this business. Oh, no, you know. So I give you a round of back again.